Call the Subcommittee on Crime and Corrections of the House Judiciary Committee to order. Today, the usual chair has called to say that he won't be able to join us this afternoon, so we will continue at our own peril. And we have four bills on the agenda, one of which is one principally sponsored by the chair of the committee, but he has given us permission to proceed with what testimony might be here and even the offering, I understand, of some amendments. We will begin by opening the hearing on House Bill 2518, and counsel, would you bring us up to speed on that bill relating to computer crime?
Certainly, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. As we left this bill, Mr. Wilhelms, who represents U.S. West, was going to meet with his attorneys and sort of narrow the purpose of this bill. And he's clarified that the purpose of the bill is to make illegal the theft of proprietary information, which is described as scientific, technical, or commercial information, including any design, process, procedure, list of customers, list of suppliers, customers' records, business code, or improvement thereof. This definition was modeled after the 1977 Wyoming statutes. These amendments are reflected in the -1 LC amendments you should have in front of you. Additionally, the city of Eugene, I believe, never got to testify last time, and they would like the committee to take a look at their February 13th letter that should be in your files and consider its amendment to the definition section of the bill. It would read, data includes, but is not limited to, numbers, text, voice, graphics, and images. This amendment expands the common use of data to include all types of information stored in automated systems. And I think there's a representative from the city of Eugene in the audience if you have questions.
Mr. Wilhelms, do you want to add anything to that presentation? It's relevant?
Is that a precondition? Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Gary Wilhelms with U.S. West. We support the amendments as drafted. I think it probably accomplishes exactly what we were trying to accomplish, and at the same time probably takes care of the concerns that most of the members of this subcommittee had during the last hearing. So we support the amendments, and I think it looks good the way it is.
Any questions of Mr. Wilhelms? Thank you very much. Is there someone here from Eugene? Yes, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Linda Lynch with the City of Eugene. We requested that amendment because on our mainframe in Eugene Lane County are stored all the assessment and taxation records, planning and zoning records, the city's entire financial and payroll package, the library card catalog, which are increasingly subject to hacking as PCs become more sophisticated and more powerful. What we wanted to accomplish was to be sure that that data that was stored on the mainframe was covered in sub 3 on page 2 of the bill as printed. On line 4, it mentions data documentation or data contained in such computer. The definition that we offered is consistent with the definitions in ORS 192 on public records.
Thank you, Linda. Any questions?
Well, I'm curious, Mr.
Representative
Chair,
Bauman,
about the I'm curious about the enhancement feature. And I guess the question for you is whether you're familiar with what the record of prosecutions and sentences is for this, and whether we've hit the lid and we're sending everybody to jail for the maximum on a Class A misdemeanor, and after they've spent their year there, they're not reformed, so we need to send them to the penitentiary for 5 years.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bauman, no, I'm not familiar with what that record is. When this bill was first printed, I didn't even refer it like to our court or to our police department. We referred it to our computer services division, and the police department asked to see it, and their comment was, this is the crime of the future. This is, you know, increasing, people have just more access to computers, you want to protect your data. They of course get nervous about if someone were able to break into the law enforcement systems. I have no idea what the history is on it.
Thank you. I guess that's a question. Mr. Wilhelms, is that part of you? I'm wondering where that recommendation, why the recommendation for the enhancement?
Mr. Wilhelms, would you like to come up and participate?
The enhancement being, meaning the elevation of the penalty from a class A misdemeanor to a class C felony. It was recommended through our security department and attorneys that the penalties be enhanced to more severely deal with computer hackers who we're beginning to have more experience with as time goes on.
I guess the question is more severely than what? Are we already sentencing computer hackers who you've identified to the maximum under Class A misdemeanor and finding that that's not enough? Or is this the sort of idea that knowing that that is out there is a deterrent and we'll get in our phone bill a notice that says, notice, this has been moved from a Class A misdemeanor to a Class C felony, so if you were thinking about it, you might think about that.
Well, I think the answer might be all of the above. I can't, I am not an expert in what the experience has been in court with the history of all of the trials that have that there have been on computer hacking. I can't even tell you how many there have been. I just know that the concern is that that the existing law does not appear to be deterring computer hackers very much at the current time, and that it was felt that that I think the example we gave was that there was a problem in the law, the way it is currently written, with the fact that you can you could physically damage someone's PC and be guilty of a Class C felony under the law today. However, you could hack the state of Oregon's database, or U.S. West's database, or the city of Eugene's database, which in our mind would be a far more serious matter and simply be guilty of a Class A misdemeanor. So we think there's an inconsistency in the law to start with. Secondarily, we would hope that it would be more of a deterrent.
Mr. Chairman.
And we would like to deal with them as severely as we could deal with them in court.
Representative Pelori?
Mr. Wilhelms, do you have any idea what you have invested in your computer system and your company?
Well, I would have to double check. It would be, if you're talking about just in U.S. West in Oregon, it would be in terms of hundreds of millions of dollars. If you're talking about U.S. West, the corporation, 14 states, I'm sure you'd be talking in terms of billions.
Either answer is, I think, makes the point.
Yeah, it does.
Certainly it does. First, those of us who can understand these things, it does.
Excuse me, Representative Calori?
Yeah.
I understood that.
He was talking to him.
He was talking to me.
Representative Mannix?
Thank you. I'm trying to understand something here. You say you support the amendments, Mr. Wilhelms, but the amendments put us back to where we were before in terms of the violations being a Class C felony if you knowingly and without authorization alter and so forth. But if you just knowingly and without authorization use, it's going to be a Class A misdemeanor with these amendments. Are you aware of that?
Representative Mannix, I believe, though, that the insertion of the definition of proprietary information in subsection 1 is a portion of the bill that carries the Class C felony designation.
No. Subsection 1 just defines all the words.
Pardon
subsection
me.
Two
I gave you the wrong subsection. Oh. Definitions are in sub 1. The crime is in sub 2. And sub 2 is a subsection that carries the Class C felony designation. It inserts the reference to the definition in line 1, page 2, which is the last line of subsection 2.
I see. Committing theft, you're satisfied that when you add including but not limited to theft of proprietary information, then you've taken care of your problem about the heavy-duty hack.
Yes, with the new definition of proprietary information, which contains commercial information and customer records and items such as that.
And then that takes care of our concern about the person who reaches over and borrows somebody's calculator, that they're still covered by four, and really that'll be a Class A misdemeanor if it was without authorization and knowingly and all of that.
That's right. It would not make a felon out of a prankster.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions? Thank you very much. Representative Bryan?
Thank you. The amendment 2518-1 we have, are we also to still be considering the Eugene language as a definition of data? It's an additional alternative or option?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman,
are you moving the...
If it's appropriate, I would so move.
Representative.
Excuse me? Work session?
Yeah. Excuse me, we're closing the public hearing on House Bill 2518. Open the work session on House Bill 2518. Representative Bryan?
Mr. Chairman, I would move the amendments identified as 2518-1 to House Bill 2518.
Representative Bryan moves the amendments to House Bill 2518, cited as House 2518-1. Is there a discussion on the motion? Is there objection to the motion? Hearing none, they are adopted. Representative Bryan, did you have another motion?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chairman. Following the new item I on page one of the bill, including a definition of data to read, data includes but is not limited to numbers, text, voice, graphics, and images.
Representative Bryan moves the amendments supplied by the City of Eugene, adding to Section 1, a subparagraph I. Is there discussion of the motion?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Mannix.
May I offer as a friendly amendment that we agree that conceptually council should put these in order so that they remain in alphabetical order? I notice all the other definitions are in alphabetical order. So that just be inserted in the proper place and they renumber the subsection so it's all alphabetical.
Yes, and that would be A through J. We were adding one. Yes.
Representative Calori?
I guess I have a little question about voice. Usually you talk about voice and data as though those are two separate things, and then data in turn gets defined. You don't... it's valid to be concerning yourself with voice, but I'm not sure voice is a type of data. Voice can be, images from voice can be retained as data. Well, I'm just not sure that that's really valid.
Representative
Bryan?
Comment, I'm not the expert on this, perhaps the City of Eugene could offer, but I'm just thinking the place data is used relates to alteration and damage to. So this would include accessing, for example, a voice recording and altering it.
Yeah.
That's probably why voice is included, because you can manipulate the message.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Mannix.
I concur with Representative Bryan's comments. I was concerned at first, too, about the word voice, but it's only as used in this section that we're going to define data this way, meaning as used in this whole new subsection. And the only reference is to data in such computer, so I'm satisfied that that's limited enough.
Further discussion? Is there objection to the Bryan motion as amended? Hearing none, it's adopted. Is there a motion on the bill?
I'll move the bill.
Representative Calori moves House Bill 2518 to the full committee as amended with a due pass recommendation. Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Courtney?
Yes.
Calori?
Yes.
Bryan?
Aye.
Aye.
Baum will be shown as excused.
Mannix?
Aye.
Aye. Representative Calori, would you?
Sure.
Thank you. Close the work session, House Bill 2518.
Good news, Chair. I was just speaking with this. He's surprised.
Representative Courtney?
He's surprised you chose him when he was
just
wanting some. He's the only one here that works for a computer company, I believe.
Probably a good reason not to, but.
We will now open the public hearing on House Bill 2641.
I'm not sure.
Council, 2641. We haven't.
Currently, the Oregon Evidence Code does not apply in certain situations enumerated in sub 4 of House Bill 2641, including most sentencing proceedings. Those proceedings are conducted by a judge. This measure would provide that the Oregon Evidence Code applies during aggravated murder sentencing proceedings.
Mr. Kistler.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Reeves Kistler. I'm Assistant Attorney General of the Department of Justice. We are not sponsoring this bill. I believe Mr. Hendershot is, but we take no position on the bill. That is, we don't oppose it or favor it, because as we understand it, the current practice in aggravated murder sentencing proceedings basically is that the evidence code applies, although as presently written, it does not specifically apply to them. The reason we're here today, and the reason we proposed an amendment to House Bill 2641, is because we wanted to make sure there was no ambiguity about what the bill was intended to do. We don't have any quarrel, as I said, with having the bill or having the Oregon Evidence Code apply to sentencing proceedings in aggravated murder cases. But we wanted to make sure that in doing that, no one would misinterpret the legislature's action to say that the legislature was disapproving the way that the Supreme Court interpreted the application of the evidence code to aggravated murder proceedings in State versus Wagner. In that case, basically what the court did was to say that sentencing proceedings are unique because in a sentencing proceeding, the focus is on basically what kind of person is this? And the second question that the jury has to answer in an aggravated murder proceeding is this person someone who'll be dangerous in the future? And what Justice Lent did when he wrote that decision was to say that even if the Oregon Evidence Code did apply to such sentencing proceedings, that rules such as 4043, which preclude the admission of bad acts evidence generally in guilt phases, wouldn't apply in the sentencing phase, and also rules such as 609, which preclude application of or use of certain kinds of convictions in impeaching people, also wouldn't apply when evidence is introduced to prove basically what is this person's character and is he the kind of person who'll be dangerous in the future. All our amendments do is not alter, they don't alter the bill proposed by Mr. Hendershot. Basically what they do is they insert one additional sentence which says that nothing in either ORS 440.170, which is basically OEC 4043, or 40.355, which is OEC 609, which controls impeachment evidence, would preclude the introduction of specific evidences of defendant's prior bad acts in the sentencing proceeding to allow the jury to basically get as complete a picture about what kind of person is this and what kind of whether he would be dangerous in the future. As we understand it, this wouldn't change existing law. It simply would make it clear that in expanding the evidence code to apply to these proceedings, the legislature did not intend to change the Supreme Court's interpretation of the evidence code.
Maybe you can just kind of stick around a little bit. Representative Dominey, I apologize. I didn't realize you were here and you're the sponsor of this bill. So if you would come forward, and Mr. Hendershot. Sorry, I went by the order of the roster here and didn't spot your name until we were into that testimony. So with my apologies.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's all right. Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Representative Sam Dominey. I represent House District 44, Cottage Grove, Sutherland. And a bill was written on behalf of Mr. Hendershot, who is a constituent of my district. I'm learning more about the issue as I go. I just wanted to be sure and come in, introduce him, and let you know who he was. I can't speak with any expertise about the bill, but I'm here to introduce it.
Thank you. Mr. Henderson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm a defense lawyer by habit, private practitioner, but I spend about half my time in criminal defense. And I wrote a letter to Representative Dominey while preparing for an aggravated murder trial, just sort of grousing that the evidence code didn't apply, and this is the result. Mr. Kistler just addressed one area of evidence. The evidence code provides. There are numerous others. The object of this proposal was simply that you apply the same rules to a jury sentencing someone as you do to a jury finding the guilt in the first place. We apply the evidence code to your computer hacking bill, for instance. The evidence code would have to be applied in a jury trial concerning whether someone was guilty of access to U.S. West computers. It seems only right that we apply evidence of equal quality to the question of life or death. That's why I wrote the letter and the bill resulted. I recognize Mr. Kistler's concerns. The purpose of the sentencing hearing is, as he stated, to find out what kind of a person you have. And the specific sections of the evidence code he points out relating to character, I think the rationale of the Supreme Court in the State versus Wagner decision is important. The bill would, however, prevent either party from introducing, for instance, unauthenticated documents. That's rules in the 1001, 1002 area. It would apply the same regulations to opinion evidence you'd have in a trial on the guilt or innocence in any crime or any other civil case. That, I think, is the importance of the bill. I'll defer to Mr. Kistler about whether the practice in the state is to operate under the evidence code, whether it applies or not. He may very well be correct. Current status of the law, where the statute specifically says that the evidence code does not apply to any sentencing proceedings, would allow a prosecutor who was so minded to dump in anything he'd get his hands on, whether it would come under the code or not. This would prevent that and at least apply the same standards for everybody, all phases of the case.
Questions for Mr. Hendershot, Representative Mannix?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Hendershot, are you comfortable with the amendment proposed by the Department of Justice?
I'm comfortable with it. I recognize the rationale, and I also recognize political reality.
Thank you.
Further questions? Mr. Kistler, do you have any response?
No, sir, only to say, except that I don't disagree with Mr. Hendershot. I think that we really don't have any objection to having the evidence code applied. Again, and as I think he recognizes, our amendment simply makes it clear that in doing so, you're not intending to affect in any way the Supreme Court's decision, State versus Wagner. And I think there's no, as I understand, there's no disagreement between us on that.
Question, Representative Bryan.
Mr. Kistler, in the amendment, you said it reads in line 19 after the word sentencing, and line 19 includes two references to the word sentencing. Are you referring to the second?
No, sir, I think it would first. Be the first. Basically, first. I wanted to take those two accepts that are in the present line 19 as presently proposed and break them out so that they'd be clearer. So it would simply be sentencing proceeding, except that it applies as required by 137.090, and except that it applies in death penalty litigation, sentencing hearings.
Further questions? Thank you very much. Is there anyone here who wishes to testify on House Bill 2641? Okay, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2641, go into work session on House Bill 2641.
Mr. Chair, I move the
Representative Bauman.
Amendment proposed by the Department of Justice.
Representative Bauman moves the amendment proposed by the Department of Justice at March 2, 1989 to House Bill 2641. Their discussion on the motion. Their objection to the motion. Hearing none, it's adopted.
Then, Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2641 as amended to the full committee with a DuPest recommendation.
Representative Baumann moves House Bill 2641 to the full committee as amended with a DuPest recommendation. Discussion. Representative Mannix.
Mr. Chairman, it's my specific intention in supporting this that the standards of State versus Wagner not be changed. I do think it is appropriate to have the Oregon Evidence Code apply as limited by this bill as now amended. Thank you.
Appreciate that, Representative Mannix. Further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Bryan.
Aye.
Baumann.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Yes.
Mannix.
Aye.
Aye. Bill passes to full committee. Representative Baumann, would you like to shepherd this? Thank you very much. And that closes the public hearing on, or the work session on House Bill 2641. We'll open the public hearing on House Bill 2667. Council, do you want to give us a brief background?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, some tortures are committed with the intent to torture but not to murder. Currently, when a death occurs because the victim has been tortured, the homicide can't be charged as murder. The present murder statute, ORS 163-115, provides that criminal homicide only constitutes murder when it is committed intentionally or when the homicide is committed during the course of or in furtherance of a felony. This bill provides that unintentional homicides resulting from intentional torture can be charged as murder, but not as aggravated murder, which requires intent to kill.
Thank you. Mr. Harkelrose.
Chairman Miller, members of the committee, my name's Doug Harkelrose. I'm the district attorney for Lane County and the current president of the Oregon District Attorneys Association. Our association supports House Bill 2667, although in looking at the language, we found it somewhat confusing and have prepared through Mr. O'Leary from Clackamas County a proposed language change, which I believe you all have in front of you. And it would delete the present language saying the death occurs during or as a result of torturing the victim and add on page 1, line 23, some language in front of you. What that does is actually narrow the scope in which we would be charging the equivalent of felony murder. And it requires a mental element of criminal negligence. So you have two mental elements in this. Basically, you're criminally negligent in the killing, and you are intentionally maiming or torturing. And this amendment adds maiming as well as the language of torture. And the reason the adding of maiming occurs is because on page 2, line 26, maiming is listed there as well, and we ought to cover the two of them together was the thinking on that. It's our thought that if you adopt this amendment, you narrow the areas in which we would be charging murder for torture by torturing somebody and then they die. And two, then you would not need the amended language on page 2, line 27, and you could just put a period after the word victim. That's all I have.
This bill just has on it, sponsored by a committee on judiciary. Is this something that was requested by you, or is it? Okay. It's learned. That's fine.
Where did it come from?
I believe Representative Mason.
Is it a Mason bill? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Bill, give it consideration, Representative. questions of Mr. Harkleroad? Representative Bryan?
Mr. Harkleroad, the definitions, we're referring to this, right?
Yes.
Are you suggesting that the definition of torture and the definition of maiming that you have here be included in the bill? They look, I mean, they look more like explanations rather than, can we come up with something more concise?
Yeah. Well, the definition of torture, there's been litigation on that in the Supreme Court in that Cornell Pinnell case told us what the definition of torture is. And the court said it's not unconstitutionally vague and gave us a definition for torture that's adequate. There is no definition for maiming. We might end up going through that same procedure that we went through with the to get a definition of torture, i.e. an appeal to the Supreme Court to find out if the definition of maiming is unconstitutionally vague or not. Basically, the court just picked up the definition of torture from the dictionary, common usage. They may well do the same thing for maiming.
Representative Bryan?
Chairman, so we're not, you're not suggesting we try to include a definition of either of these, just the amendment on the line 23?
That's correct.
Maiming of a victim, even though there was no intent to kill the victim.
That would scoop in, conceivably would scoop in murders below the level of criminal negligence in our criminal code. Probably our constitution might require criminal negligence. So if you simply say criminal negligence, you're covering, you can charge criminal negligence, you could charge recklessness, you could charge recklessness under circumstances manifesting extreme indifference to the value of human life. Any of those mental elements would suffice. But to get yourself up to aggravated murder, you have to allege either intent or felony murder.
Well, we've already taken care of aggravated.
Virginia wants to come.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mannix, from what you said a couple of times, I wonder if you're maybe misreading that 163.115, in that a couple of times you've said B, and then the death occurs during or as a result of torturing, and however we change that, isn't a part of B. I mean, that's a whole separate paragraph. And it reads, except as provided in, this is clear at the very top, in ORS 163.118 and 163.125, criminal homicide constitutes murder when, then you go directly to the death occurs during or as a result of.
I see what you're saying. We don't have to worry about, yes, I was looking at B. Right. You're talking about it as a separate.
It's a whole separate paragraph, right. So I think that the suggestion, and that probably, I mean, it is probably the easiest and most precise way to do it, would be just to say in the aggravated murder as defined in, and then cite those very specific paragraphs of subsection 1 of the section.
Could you do that again, please, so we could note your language?
Just the aggravated murder part?
Correct.
And where are we?
I think it'd be on page 2 in line 16. Is that?
Well, you would have to start fresh on the aggravated murder statute. You would probably have to move subsection 1E to the very back end of the statute. And then say, murder as defined in ORS 163.115, 1A or 1B, and the death occurred in the course of or as a result of intentional maiming or torture of the victim.
Oh, Mr. Chair, I see. I didn't understand exactly what you were doing. What if I, my suggestion would be on page 2.
I'm sorry, I don't do shorthand yet. If you could
okay, we're
go
we're
back
going
to
pick
the,
up.
After the 1A and 1B,
And the death occurred in the course of or as a result of.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Mannix?
I'd like to respectfully suggest that perhaps three counsel who are at the witness table could go off and work on this, because we finally are on the same channel of communication. And if the committee is willing that we let them work on it and have something printed up that we could read to make sure the rest of us are comfortable with it, that perhaps we could schedule a work session on it sometime soon to go over that. Or perhaps they could come back a little bit later, since we have other bills to be heard, and present us with something even handwritten that we could follow. I think that'd be very good.
Sounds fine.
Any further questions? Any further suggestions? Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on House Bill 2667? If not, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2667 and open the public hearing on House Bill 2353.
Mr. Chair, can I at this point in time ask the
Representative Baum?
I ask for unanimous consent to allow me to cast positive votes on House Bill 2518 and House Bill 2641 as amended.
Representative Baum would like unanimous consent to cast his vote.
That's correct.
On You're House right. Bill 2518 well and House Bill 2641. Any objection? Hearing none. Representative Baum, how do you vote on House Bill 2518?
With amendments, yes. And same on House Bill 2641.
Representative Baum votes aye on House Bill 2518. Representative Baum, how do you vote on House Bill 2641?
Yes.
Okay, we will now open the public hearing on House Bill 2353. Council?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, currently ORS 167.017 attempts to address the prostitution problem by providing for the crime of compelling prostitution, which is a Class B felony. This statute fails to make illegal the practice of requesting the earnings of a prostitute. Additionally, if an innocent third party is killed during pimping activities or flight therefrom, a murder charge cannot be brought against those causing the death. This measure broadens the existing compelling prostitution statute by making illegal the act of requesting a prostitute's earnings. This act and the acts which currently constitute compelling prostitution would be punishable as pimping, also a Class B felony. Under the bill, law enforcement officials would not need to inform people they are being recorded when the officer uses listening or recording devices to investigate pimping activities. Additionally, this measure would make it felony murder to cause a person's death as a result of pimping.
Okay, thank you, Council. Roger Morse?
My name's Roger Morris. I'm a detective with the Portland Police Bureau, and I work in the Drug and Vice Division, exclusively work vice crimes. And out of that area, I almost always work only compelling and promoting prostitution cases for a number of years. Today, on some rather short notice, I was asked to comment on certain aspects of this bill, and that's my purpose here today. As a matter of background, the majority of all compelling prostitution cases that are made and prosecuted in the state of Oregon are made in the city of Portland and by our small five-person investigative unit in the Drug and Vice Division. Last year alone, we investigated close to 30 compelling prostitution cases, went to trial on 18, got 18 convictions with substantial penitentiary sentences. We have approximately 6 cases pending in circuit court, and about 3 more investigations underway. As far as those of us that work with the existing law are concerned, it's a very satisfactory law, easily understood, and the district attorneys that we work with also like it. I'm somewhat of a loss here to understand the reasoning behind some of the changes, so what I'm going to do is just comment on them as they would affect us that work with the law. The first one is the changing of the term from compelling prostitution to pimping. As we all know, pimps compel prostitution, but there is a certain Hollywood image to the term pimp that I think if this law is changed, reflects somewhat of a diminished attitude towards the offense. Compelling prostitution implies intimidation and force, and there, in certain segments of the populace, a certain attraction to the lifestyle of pimps. Although that's just a matter of semantics, I think that diminishes somewhat from the structure of the law. The second area I'd like to comment on is the addition of the element wherein the request for the earnings of a prostitute would constitute compelling prostitution or pimping if so changed. Personally, number one, I'm not sure that prostitute is defined here. So what this does, if prostitute is not defined in the law, does this mean that we have to then prove that the person that the earnings were requested from is a prostitute? And if so, how do we do that? And secondly, I'm not sure that the single solitary element of a pimp or a prospective pimp, a wannabe pimp as we refer to them, walking up to what that person thinks is a prostitute and asking for her money would constitute a Class B felony. I think that's a bit severe. And although in our current investigations we use elements such as that as one of several elements in making the case on a pimp, I don't think that that single solitary element constitutes or should constitute even a Class B felony.
Chairman.
Representative Minnis.
Mr. Morris, on that point of requesting the earnings of a prostitute, do you ever find in your investigations that a wannabe would-be pimp or a real-life pimp demands the money from the woman or uses some force to cause that person to give the money over to? So is it a matter of semantic in terms of the word request as opposed to compulsion to give the money over?
I don't think the change of the word, Representative Minnis, is even a satisfactory alternative. I think that the mere addition of that element is a bit severe for the statute itself. I think that certain aspects of promoting prostitution, the Class C felony, cover that area of the crime. I think that the elements of the current statute, compelling prostitution, are quite satisfactory in obtaining the evidence. And having worked literally dozens of these cases over the years, we have come to rely on several sources of evidence before we present a case such as this to the district attorney and then ultimately to the grand jury. District attorneys are somewhat skeptical to initiate a case like this unless we have elements of evidence from many sources. And I would doubt that I could get a conviction on this Class B felony as proposed simply on someone walking up to what that person thought was a prostitute on the street and demanding what they thought was their earnings. I don't
Chairman,
think I could.
If we changed the law, you could. I guess I see the objective of the bill is trying to enhance your capabilities of prosecuting those who are engaged in the pimping process. And as I understand it, it's not a very easy case to put together.
I understand.
It does require
that.
Cooperation on the part of those that are working under the direction of a pimp or something. You need some kind of corroborating information. So I guess in light of that, as you look at the bill, it might be beneficial for the committee that you would enumerate some areas of statute that could be changed that would help enhance your ability to enforce that law.
No, I understand the reasoning behind adding that element. And the only thing that causes me a little bit of doubt, again, is there are pimps and there's wannabe pimps. And a lot of the wannabe pimps, before they become pimps, make the circuit going up and down the street, accosting what they think are prostitutes. And part of the street code is that if they can get an existing or a prostitute working for another a pimp to look at him, to speak to him, to give him her money, then that prostitute then is his property. And they will go up and down the street sometimes accosting 10, 12, 15 different girls, one right after the other, demanding the earnings in an attempt to take them away from the other pimp.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bauman.
Well, I would suggest, Mr. Morse, that what you have there is no longer a wannabe pimp, but under the definition of this bill, an actual legal, recognized under the law and punishable under the law, pimp.
I understand that.
That's the object.
I understand that. There's also much more subtle types of compelling prostitution and promoting prostitution that require much longer detailed investigations, and that also would then be same crime, where you have beatings, the committing of rapes and sodomies and assaults and thefts from the girls, and those kind of investigations sometimes take weeks and months to make one case, while the same statute would then cover one person walking up to another person and demanding their perceived earnings. That's my only question. It seems like on the one hand, you have a lot more severe conduct from one set of elements than this one. Go ahead.
Representative Manning?
Yes, thank you.
I think sometimes you may be looking at this through the wrong end of the binoculars. We're trying to make it easier to go after pimps, not harder. Maybe there's some other things we ought to put in the bill that we ought to put in the bill to make it easier to go after pimps for other things. And maybe I didn't think of putting the label pimping in there as being making it Hollywoodish. It just made it very clear what we were dealing with here, a street word.
Yeah.
But maybe if the nomenclature's a problem, we can change it. Although it was designed to open up the statute a little bit, because pimping doesn't always include compelling prostitution. You might have a prostitute who is not being compelled but is very willing to be under the authority of a pimp. Assuming, now you're going to hear that argument at least. So we're saying, well, we don't care if you're willing or not, but if someone requests your earnings, and yes, if you can show that somebody goes down the streets of Portland and asks one prostitute for her earnings, why not hit them with a Class B felony and put them away? Then they'll stop doing it, maybe.
I understand.
What do you think
that.
About that?
I'm for that. I just don't want there to be trouble with the two extremes of the elements down the road in being able to easily prosecute these cases and get cases issued, and then juries to convict with those types of elements.
Mr. Chair,
I'm all for easier elements, don't get me wrong.
I appreciate that. I have to make one more comment. I will learn to with the some of the looks that I get, I'll learn more quickly. Representative Courtney. My comment is that the other features of criminal behavior that you mentioned with regard to the more serious cases of Class B felonies are in themselves recognized as other crimes and would be crimes standing alone, whether they were committed against a prostitute or any other woman or man in the state of Oregon.
That's correct. And the reason I made that comment was that almost always when we investigate compelling prostitution cases, they are also issued out with assaults, rapes, sodomies, kidnaps, thefts, other crimes of that nature. All those crimes go hand in hand, and they're long-term scenarios that don't happen in 5 minutes. They go on for days, weeks, and months.
Representative Courtney.
I got to ask you this question. The chair of this full committee, Representative Mason, is the chief sponsor of this bill, Portland.
Yes.
Have you talked to him about this little bill?
No, I haven't.
You know where the district attorney of Portland stands on this, Multnomah County stands on this bill?
Personally, I don't.
I assume the reason a lot of us have signed on to it, but I assume he thinks it must be, I know he's not here today, but I assume he thinks it must be a problem in the Portland area. They wouldn't have done this. Just don't know what's going on here. You just don't like this bill.
I won't say I don't like it. I'm just saying that I think that...
I understand. You think we may glorify this kind of stuff?
No, that may have been the wrong term to use. I think that compelling prostitution, just as a matter of semantics, states what the charge is.
Representative Manning?
How about an alternative route? How about leaving the compelling prostitution statute alone and just saying separately, and maybe we shouldn't make it a Class B felony to just request the earnings of a prostitute, but have something such as a Class B misdemeanor or Class A misdemeanor and call it pimping. Pimping is requesting the earnings of a prostitute or collecting the earnings of a prostitute. Leave out all these other elements. Compelling prostitution would be a heavier crime. And you have a misdemeanor where the one person who does walk up to a prostitute and say, I want your money or let me have your money, ends up being a criminal.
That's a viable alternative. There is the Class C felony crime of promoting prostitution. That may very well be considered inclusion in that.
Did he?
Representative Courtney?
That one went by me. Let me ask this. If you leave compelling in the prostitution, but leave request the earnings of a prostitute, that doesn't work?
I'll work with what's ever in there.
No, I'm asking. Does that work or that doesn't work? If you're compelling prostitution, you're not requesting earnings. You're only requesting earnings if you're a pimp. Is that what I want to know is, do they fit or not fit? Where's Mr. Penn? He's smiling, half of them are smiling like that. I want to know, if you drop the word pimp and leave everything else exactly in, what does that do? That's what your hang-up is, isn't it?
Personally, I think that requesting the earnings of a prostitute is more in lines with promoting prostitution, which is a Class C felony. Compulsion, compelling prostitution, the way we've always handled the investigation involves the force of forcing the prostitute to work and earn the money.
Representative Mannix?
I like to use these hearings, obviously, Mr. Chairman. I hope you don't mind, but it's not a chance fine.
That's why we're here.
Maybe under promoting prostitution, we could just include under promoting prostitution, which is a Class B, Class C, somewhere,
yes.
Excuse me. It says, receives or agrees to receive money or other property, da-da-da-da-da. How about receives or agrees to receive or asks for? And we could put some language in here about asking for money from a prostitute from her earnings. I mean, I want to go after the person who does just that. That was one of my reasons for signing off on this bill. I wanted to get after that.
I think that's a more appropriate degree of a crime in the promoting prostitution statute, if that element was added there, that it is in compelling.
Further questions?
I have one more comment and one more section of this, if I could, please. In the section on page 2 of my copy here, permitting police officers during the investigation to use a body wire simply by filing an affidavit with the district court instead of the current method, which is filing an affidavit in support of an ex parte order. As a matter of background, by the time we get prostitutes who are willing to cooperate in investigations of this nature, they have left the pimp. And I can think of only one case in 14 years where we have used a body wire on a victim, a prostitute, simply because it puts them back in danger, and it's a rather skeptical method to obtain evidence. Therefore, although this is great and it's nice to have in there, it is not something that we use now and would probably use in the future.
Representative Bryan?
Well, in that regard, what about the use of the body wire by an officer or undercover officer rather than a victim or a prostitute?
Certainly, that would be nice.
I think that's what this at least includes, if not actually references, is the law enforcement officer.
Yeah, I believe it does. I would, in my experience with ex parte orders, I know they're always subject to extreme attack in court. And I'm thinking that the loosening up of using them here simply by stating an affidavit that you were using one, again, I don't know what the legal ramifications would be in court, but I would assume that that would open up a new territory for a suppression of evidence.
Representative Courtney?
I was taken by your phrase, a skeptical way of getting evidence.
probably not what I meant to say, dubious way of getting evidence.
Body wires, because of the crime that's involved here or in general?
It's a very dangerous way of getting evidence. It's not always reliable. Sometimes there's periods where clothing rustles over body wires and you miss some of what's said. Usually, if an officer uses one, they're with a criminal alone. Cover is a long, backup is a long ways off. We don't use them a lot. They're dangerous.
Thank you.
Further questions? Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on House Bill 2353? Mr. Penn.
Yes, Mr. Chair. My name is Dale Penn. I'm representing the Oregon District Attorneys Association on this bill. Hesitate to testify. It's not my day, I don't think. I would simply say that we support the bill only from the perspective that it does loosen proof requirements and loosen the ability to use a wire device in these kinds of cases. I respect the opinions of the Portland police officer and the difficulties of being in the trenches with these cases. And I don't believe that we would have any opposition either to the amendments that Representative Mannix proposed as far as making the requests a promoting prostitution rather than compelling. Our position is simply that this is a difficult problem. It is primarily prosecuted in the city of Portland and in Multnomah County at the present time. That doesn't mean that it's going to be confined to that area. Certainly prostitution is not confined to that area. We believe that the lessening of the proof requirements or expanding the crime itself to encompass other types of pimping activity is a good idea because it does expand the ability to punish that offense. Because of that, we support the concept.
Thank you, Mr. Penn. Questions?
Thank Mr. Penn for coming forward and rescuing the Multnomah County or State Representative's bill after it was taken on by the
Mr. Chairman, I have some questions.
Representative Minnis.
I discussed with you briefly in the hallway some of my own thoughts regarding some amendments to the bill. And on line 7, the bill, existing language, deals with intimidation, force or intimidation to compel. And I wanted to try to broaden that area to include any kind of force, so that it's very clear that if you use any degree of force whatsoever, that it bumps you up into the higher crime. And also to add words like coercion or deception, intimidation, coercion, deception, to compel or deceive another person to engage in prostitution. Do you have any comments regarding language of that nature or something similar to that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Minnis, we would support that language or those types of amendments, again, because it broadens the descriptive acts that pimping or compelling prostitution involves. The difficulty of having a cooperative witness when the witness may be a prostitute and the prostitute may still have a desire to protect the individual you're charging, and so the area of deception as an element of the crime is certainly something that would be helpful. Admittedly, these changes, I think, would be of assistance. It certainly doesn't guarantee that you could make cases under that language, but there would be those cases where the evidence would justify a charge and you'd have sufficient proof. And by expanding that language, I think it would assist in the process of dealing with the problem.
I also discussed one additional concept and the idea of giving some form of civil immunity or immunity from civil prosecution on the part of the
the defendant case who might be, the witness may be sued by that person. Thoughts regarding that kind of a inducement to cooperate with prosecutorial effort?
Mr. Chair and Representative Minnis, I certainly would have no objection to that either. Civil immunity, I suppose that could be some basis in some cases where it would remove a stumbling block to a witness to cooperate if they knew that there was civil immunity. Criminal immunity is an issue that, as we discussed, I personally do not like to give immunity to any witness. I think it destroys their effectiveness in front of a jury. And if there was statutory criminal immunity, I think it would detract from the ability to prove these cases. Obviously, we still have the ability to give immunity in a criminal case if that's a last resort, but I would hope that there wouldn't be mandatory criminal immunity in this kind of bill.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Penn.
Thank you. May I ask a question?
Yes. A question?
How about a separate crime of soliciting, not compelling, not promoting, but soliciting prostitution? It just says a person commits the crime of soliciting prostitution if the person requests the earnings of a prostitute.
Yes.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mannix, I would have no difficulty with that, and that may get at the committee's intent more adequately than this bill. I have no problem with it.
Senator Courtney? Yeah. Perplexed?
Refers to the pimp. What about the other one? Compelling those. What are you going to do with compelling? You going to leave compelling on the books?
Yeah. Well, that's got all kinds of egregious provisions in it. You got to be nasty to be compelling, and you got to be a little bit nasty to promote. If you're not quite as nasty, you're soliciting.
Well, wait a minute. Who is the solicitor?
The pimp.
I don't see how that...
Oh, you also want to hit the customer, too?
Oh, all right. Soliciting, to me, would be the customer. That's my point, as opposed to the pimp, in terms of how I'm using the word. I'm just confused.
Oh. I see what you mean. Well, I was trying to get out the pimp who was soliciting someone to prostitute by saying, I'd like your earnings from prostitution, without any other factor involved.
That's an interpretation of... That's all.
How about suggesting prostitution?
Representative Minnis?
You're not in a work session, but I guess it's offered as a suggestion.